With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome in, everybody. My name is Mark Farzetta. This is the Farzi Show, presented by Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers. Word of warning, first and foremost, PJ, still off. Still off. It's not like he's taking vacation time, but my producer extraordinaire, Jim Hyden, is going through with a lot of other people in his neighborhood, a bit of a power outage. It's been going on for a while. I offered a place to crash if he needed one, a place to shower if he needed one, and yep, still going through the struggle right now. Hopefully he gets everything turned on in the next, I don't know, 6 hours or so. So we have him along for the ride for the rest of the way. That'd be nice. But he got me pushing the button. So at any moment, something could blow up. Just at any moment. We don't know. So bear with me. That's part of the excitement of the show. Speaking of blowing up, Mac McClung steals the show over the weekend. How would you like to be any of those other guys that were taking part in the NBA All-Star Weekend festivities, especially the slam dunk contest? And this is the guy you lost to. In case you don't see this, for the people on the podcast, it's Mac McClung, a slam dunk winner, 76ers G Leaguer, right now a 76er, considering he's still on that 10-day contract. He is wearing a fanny pack in what looks like high school. High school is where, by the way, he broke the records of Allen Iverson when it came to scoring records in a single season by a Virginia high school player. Not too shabby at all. Joel Embiid also starred at the All-Star game last night. He was not the MVP, but oh my goodness, what a performance by him. And yes, I'll give credit to a Boston Celtic, a record of 55 points scored by Jason Tatum at the All-Star game last night. Before I get into anything, let me just say that I am not the guy to yell at clouds. I don't mind when things are late kickoffs, late tip-offs in this case, late face-offs, first pitches. I'm not that guy. But when it comes to an All-Star game, that there's no business for an NBA All-Star game starting at 9 o'clock. That is way too late, especially when halftime is like 45 minutes. I wanted to stay up and watch the whole thing. I did stay up and watch the whole thing. I talked to Paul Hudrick, who's our guest today, about the 76ers, about the All-Star game as well, but mostly about where the 76ers are headed in the last 26 games of the regular season. But it doesn't need to be that late. I mean, there we go. Back to my childhood. Okay. I remember the late Sunday afternoon game, watching the guys play, enjoying every second of Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and the early days of like Grant Hill, Gary Payton, watching guys like that, Stockton and Malone, and watching all that and enjoying every second of that on a nice lazy Sunday afternoon. It was a little late for me. But anyway, as far as the weekend festivities go, I like everybody else. I mean, I saw Mac McClung. We talked about it on Friday. He was on with Sham Sharania of The Athletic, where he was talking about two different dunks he was going to do that no one's ever seen before. And he grabbed everybody's attention over the weekend, and everybody was tweeting about him. And a couple of the fast facts about him that I found amazing was one, what I already mentioned about Allen Iverson. He broke his high school single-season scoring record, which is insane to think about that. Georgetown kid who ended up transferring to Texas Tech, originally was brought up by the undrafted in 2021, was brought in by the Lakers organization, brought in by the Bulls after that, was G League stints with both teams and both organizations, came over here to the 76ers. We're starting to prove his worth a little bit there at the G League level. But Berg's out on the scene here over the weekend. And one of the most fascinating things I saw that his career earnings were $106,000 as a G League basketball player over the last 2 years. $106,000. He made $100,000 over the weekend by winning the slam dunk contest. And he'll probably get way more than that when it comes to endorsements, social media plugs, whatever it might be, now that everybody knows the name, Mac McClung. Now, the other part of it is when they asked him after the game, Malika Andrews, who, if you don't know, I always refer to as the angel sent to us from heaven to talk to us about basketball. She's interviewing after the game, after the contest, and she says to him, hey, hey there, fella. What? She didn't say that, but more or less. Hey, what are you gonna do? A lot of money for you. You just cashed in a lot of money there. What are you gonna do with it? Probably invest it. Good for you, son. I'm not gonna go out there and buy some fancy car. It's not an amazing amount of money, but it's a good amount of money when you've made your career earnings, almost your career earnings, in a couple of hours. Not bad, kid. You had yourself a good weekend. He definitely won the weekend. As for Joel Embiid, I'll give you his numbers. This was, actually, before we get to the numbers, I believe our friend Austin Krell signed this up, or summed this up rather perfectly. Joel Embiid, the first overall pick as an all-star starter. That was over two-time MVP Nikola Jokic, over 10 dudes originally voted in ahead of Embiid. Because remember, he was not voted in as a starter, and then all of a sudden became a starter, and then all of a sudden became the first pick in the all-star selection process, which they did live. I guess people really like that stuff. I didn't care. I'll say this, though. I thought it was better. It was better than what they normally do, which is have the two captains pick on TNT and then Chuck and these guys react, which, by the way, if you missed it, Chuck and Shaq, their mics were on during the initial minutes, the first couple of minutes of the selection process of the All-Star game last night. So I was waiting for somebody to say something. Nobody said anything. Anyway, Joel Embiid's the first guy that's picked. Jokic was the second to last pick. Larry Markkanen was the only guy that was picked. He was picked last. Picked second to last was Joker, and he was on the same team as Embiid. Fascinating. Fascinating stuff. When it came to actually playing, Joel Embiid's on the court for 32 points. All right, he's played for 28 minutes. He was 14 of 19 shooting, 4 of 8 from beyond the arc, 7 rebounds in the game, 4 assists, 32 points. Kyrie Irving, 32 points as well for Team LeBron, who suffered their first loss in this All-Star format, by the way. And he had 15 assists in the game as well. Joker, for those scoring at home, only had 4 points, but he only played 20 minutes as well. Joel Embiid played a great game. And I didn't see this during the game, but Mike Malone came out after the game and said that Joel Embiid was one of the guys that you can actually watch in last night's game. This is a lot of credit given to Joel Embiid by the coach. Take a listen to this.
Honored to be here. It's an honor to be a part of a great weekend, great players, but that is the worst basketball game ever played.
How do you fix it?
I don't know if you can fix it. I mean, I give Joel Embiid, Kyrie Irving, those guys were like competing. Joel was imploring some of the guys to play harder, to try to get some defense in, but no one got hurt. They put on a show for the fans, but that is a tough game to sit through, I'm not going to lie.
Here's my experience last night, all right? Well, this is my day yesterday that led up to the All-Star game. We had some family function. Had a family function on Saturday, all right? And we just, as you guys know, we moved into a new house, so not a lot of, nobody's really seen the new house, and we're getting it ready. And like yesterday, I was taking apart a 90s-style entertainment center, you know, with like the two big like bookshelves on the side, and in the middle there's the big thing for like the tube television, the back of the day tube TVs, right? I was taking that apart yesterday morning. But Saturday we're at a family thing, and then my cousin Will says to me, hey, What are you guys doing tomorrow, Sunday? And I'm like, just watching the All-Star game probably at night. What's going on? He's like, oh, I wouldn't want to see the house. I was like, yeah, man, come on down. He's got a lovely girlfriend that we've just met. And bring it out. So, and this, I'm sure, if you have a big family, you can identify. So I'm expecting my cousin Will and his lovely lady to come down and see the house. And then I get a text from my cousin Will's sister, my cousin Jess. And Jess says, hey, when's a good time? Now, Jess has an awesome husband and then three beautiful children. And I'm like, oh, wow. And then another cousin who was in town from Baltimore is like, hey, we're gonna come over with everybody. So now all of a sudden I have 10 people. This is beautiful. I wouldn't change this for the world. This is not a complaint. But it ended up being like everyone. My brother came over with his kids and it was great. Everyone saw the house. It was beautiful. The kids got together. That warms our hearts as close cousins, as cousins that grew up together more like brothers and sisters. It's great to see our kids then playing together, right? But all of a sudden we had a house full of people. So we had some people watching the All-Star game that aren't real big basketball fans. And they're like, is this what the NBA is now? Is this how they play? And I'm like, the All-Star game is not the example you go by here. If you want to watch basketball, very little defense. They just kind of put on a show. And then now because there's a charity tie-in with every quarter where a charity wins money at the end of every quarter, right? You'll see guys maybe in the final minute. It used to just be the final 2 minutes of the game of the fourth quarter there. They would actually start trying a little bit, like defensively. Now it's like the last minute of the quarter you start to see a little bit of defense. But I give a lot of credit to Mike Malone for at least acknowledging how terrible of a basketball game is. He said all the stuff you're supposed to say. It's an honor to coach, honor to be a part of the weekend, honor to coach these guys and at least get to know them a little bit more in a different light from how I normally know the vast majority of these guys as competitors, as opponents. But it's nice to have this kind of experience with them. But all that being said, this is the worst pile of crap you can ever watch if you're a basketball fan. But it is a show. It's meant to be a show. It's not meant to be a competitive event until the last minute of every quarter. But I give him credit for at least acknowledging that. And I love the idea that he singled out. Kyrie Irving's a little interesting that he singled out, but that's who he singled out. And then he also singles out Joel Embiid for being one of the guys to rally some of the guys around him to actually play a little bit harder. That's our guy, Joel Embiid, trying to motivate during the NBA All-Star game. I love it. I absolutely love it. Here's what I love most about it. If he's taking that seriously, how is he going to take the last 26 games of this regular season? Because I know we're coming off some pretty big highs here with the Phillies making it to a World Series, with the Eagles making it to the Super Bowl. I know we're coming off of these highs. And I feel like what's being swept under the rug right now is the importance of the next, 2 months? Of the regular season for the 76ers, we don't know where we're going after this. I look at this basketball team, and as I said last week, I still see a second-round exit. Paul Hudrick of Liberty Ballers will join us momentarily, and we'll get into what he sees as this season goes on for the 76ers. But I would love for the last 25, 26 games of this regular season to see this team take a step forward with being comfortable with one another. Tyrese Maxey back in the starting lineup. I'd love to see that. De'Anthony Melton come in here and be the guy that, you know, play the role that you originally got him for, which is to be an off-the-bench player and help the team that way. I would love to see all that come together. And the Sixers show all of us, that they are not going to be another second-round exit team. They are going to be a team that nobody wants to face in the playoffs because they're playing the best basketball over the last stretch of the season to go into the playoffs. I want the Sixers, over the last 26 games, to be the team nobody wants to face. I would love to see them build themselves up into that. Jason Tatum dropped 55 in the All-Star game last night. That's a new All-Star game record. MVP, as you would assume, with those kinds of numbers. I want him and Jaylen Brown not wanting the Sixers in that second round. If that's the way it falls into place, I want them not wanting the smoke of the Philadelphia 76ers when it comes playoff time. That's what I'm crossing my fingers for. That's what I'm going to be watching for over the last 2 months of the season. Sixers putting themselves in the spot to be the best team going into the playoffs. The team playing the best basketball. James Harden playing his best basketball. Joel Embiid, of course, playing his best basketball. Tyrese Maxey back in that starting lineup, seeing the best basketball we've seen from him in a long time. I just question whether or not Doc Rivers is the guy to organize this team in that matter. I'm not a wait and see guy. I'm a show me guy. I'm hoping that's what the Sixers show me. We're going to get to our friend Paul Hudger coming up in just a second. But right now, let me tell you about my man, Steven Singer of Steven Singer Jewelers, the other corner of 8th and Walnut, right there on Jewelers Row. For over 40 years, Steven has been treating Philadelphia like the family that it is to Steven and his team of real jewelry experts at the other corner of 8th and Walnut, where now Steven likes to talk about the perfect price guarantee, because that's what he offers, the perfect price guarantee. Each and every day online at IHateStevenSinger.com and the other corner of 8th and Walnut. Now, what's the perfect price? Very simple. While other jewelers like to mark things way up just to mark it down a couple of bucks because you're such a great negotiator and haggler.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Steven Singer, you know what he does? Keeps it at that perfect price each and every day, so you don't have to worry about whether or not you're catching the sale or you have the right promo code or whatever it might be. You can sit back, relax, and concentrate on the beautiful piece of dazzling diamond jewelry that you want to buy for that special someone in your life. Ready for love, diamond engagement ring, standing by at the ready at the other corner of 8th and Walnut. Steven Singer Jewelers, one place, one price, the perfect price, online at IHateStevenSinger.com. That's IHateStevenSinger.com. Without further ado, now remember, bear with me, folks. I'm the guy pushing the buttons. PJ's off. Without further ado, here is our friend Paul Hudrick of Liberty Ballers. Nope, that's the wrong button. Oh, did I already do the thing? Here we go. Hold on. Wait for it. And joining us right now, you know the Eagles must have had a long playoff run, you know, like to the Super Bowl. If it's been this long since we've talked to this particular guest of Liberty Ballers fame and so many other things, our friend Paul Hudrick back with us. What's up, Paulie?
Hey, Mark, it's wonderful to see you. I was just excited to everyone else to not be on your show just because of the Eagles' success, not because I love seeing you and talking sports with you. But yeah, I very much enjoyed the Super Bowl run more.
That was a good time. Remember the days. Remember the days. That was fun.
We were so young.
We were just a couple of kids. Paul, at this time that we rejoin you, you rejoin the show also, where are we at with the Sixers? I know standings-wise, now after the All-Star break, we have the third seed in the Eastern Conference, the 76ers do. They have a guy who's trying to put his name back in the MVP race with Joel the Process Embiid. But where are we? Are we still looking at a second-round exit? How are you feeling about the Sixers with 26 games left in the regular season?
Yeah, I mean, they went on that great run during that one chunk of the season. They had an unbelievable January. Joel Embiid was the player of the month, December and January in the Eastern Conference. Doc Rivers, coach of the month in January, which I'm sure everyone was thrilled about to hear that and supportive of the head coach of the team. But yeah, I during that run, you started seeing, to me at least, you started seeing glimpses of like, okay, you can see reasons why you can be maybe a little optimistic that maybe this team won't just be a second-round exit team, that they have a little bit more. I think one of the big things you've seen is with James Harden and with Joel Embiid, the half-court offense is functional. It's functional late in games. Like, they can actually win games in the end. Like, I know people get upset when they blow leads, and they've done that a bunch. But guess what? This year, they've won a bunch of those games, right? Like, how many games have you watched this year and thought to yourself, yeah, the Sixers don't win this game last year or the year before that or whatever. They just don't win games like that because typically they don't have a viable half-court offense. They have that right now. When Joel Embiid and James Harden are on the floor, they are crushing other teams. Their starting unit has been good. I am still of the belief that Tyrese Maxey should probably be back in the starting lineup and D'Anthony Melton back on the bench. That's just my two cents on that.
It's almost like that's why they traded for D'Anthony Melton.
Yeah, you know.
Signed him.
No, traded for D'Anthony Melton. That was a draft night trade. And I understood Doc Rivers rolling with that starting lineup when they were playing so well. Like, he just basically riding the hot hand, right? Like, oh, this lineup's working really well together, winning a ton of games. Why am I going to break that up? I got that. But when you have that horrible loss to Orlando and you have that horrible loss to the Knicks, it's like, okay, you're not hot anymore. Like, I think you can get your best players in the starting unit and do that. But I don't know. We'll see what happens in the second half. We were told there were three starting lineups, but apparently there's only one. But I would say, too, but to kind of just really long-windedly answer your question, I would say you look at the standings right now, the Celtics are number one, the Bucks are number two, the Sixers are number three. I think that's where we are. I think that is what it is. And I think the East, most of the East is kind of where I believe it's going to be. I think the Cavaliers are just a notch below. I think that this, unfortunately, the Celtics and the Bucks are up here. The Sixers are right below them, and then right below them is the Cavaliers. I think, you know, Miami and Toronto, I think those teams are going to make some runs in the second. They're both going to make runs in the second half. I actually really like what the Knicks are doing. I don't necessarily love their entire roster, but I love what Jalen Brunson has brought and how good he's looked. They're an interesting team and not a team that's going to be an easy out. So the issue is, Mark, if you don't get one of the top two seeds, you're going to have to play Boston or Milwaukee in the second round. And as we sit here right now, I can't with confidence say that they are better than either of those teams.
I have the same feeling as you do. I am terrified yet again of that second round. And what's crazy is I might be more terrified than I've ever been, because I think so much depends on it. Because if the Sixers don't rally in the last 26 games and all of a sudden prove and show the league that they can be better than the Celtics and they can be better than the Milwaukee Bucks, for instance, then I'm looking at another second round playoff exit and then potentially seeing James Harden no longer in a Sixers jersey. So it's like, at that point, what do you do? Do you rely on Tyrese Maxey to take you to the next level along with Joel Embiid? As much as I love him, I still think the Sixers need a little bit more than just him and Joel Embiid in order to make it past that second round. But when I do look at the last, you know, 25 plus 26 games left in the season, I still end at that same spot, unfortunately, that it's the second round exit yet again.
And they have the toughest schedule in the NBA the rest of the way. That's not helpful. If you look at their March schedule, it is particularly brutal, not just opponent-wise, but a lot of road games, a lot of back-to-backs. When you have three players, I would say three players, you're trying to manage very much so, with Joel Embiid, with James Harden, and even with PJ Tucker, who I think was overplayed to start the season. And now I think you're seeing that he's been a little bit healthier and actually doing the things that he was brought in here to do. So it's not going to be an easy thing to navigate, especially in the month of March and especially for the rest of the season. I will say this, though. When you have a player as special as Joel Embiid, if he, and this is just the biggest if of all ifs, if he can stay healthy, you have a shot every single night against any team in the NBA. So if he is mostly healthy, which he's not even right now, playing with a, you know, in the All-Star game with a sore foot. If he's healthy in the second round of the playoffs, they will have a chance, because he is just that good. He is that great of a player that they will have a chance.
I will continue crossing my fingers while we're on Joel Embiid, and I do want to get to more with Tyrese.
He's never been healthy in a playoff run, though.
No, I don't even want to, not even that. Not even going to go there just yet. But just, how does it work? See, Paul, I don't know about you, my friend, but I happen to think that Joel Embiid, at least last year, was the MVP of the league, and you could certainly make the strong argument he should have been back-to-back MVPs that went to some guy named Nikola Jokic, as we both know. So how does it happen then that Joel Embiid doesn't even get named an all-star starter, then does get named an all-star starter, then does get picked first of the starters, and the two-time MVP not only gets picked after him, well after him, then ends up being on the same team of him as the all-star game? How does that make any sense if you're either an MVP voter in the grand scheme, or you're just somebody voting on the all-star game, or you're a coach campaigning for Joel Embiid or whatever? How does it make sense that he's that good and picked that high amongst the players, but not on that same wavelength with everybody else?
Well, the only thing you have to take into account is that LeBron James doesn't exactly have the greatest history of building teams. He had a pretty strong hand in some of the stuff the Lakers have done. But all jokes aside, it shows you that amongst the players, like, they know how great Joel Embiid is. Literally the only thing holding Joel Embiid back, quote unquote, is just that he misses games. And he's gonna keep missing games. He's 7 feet tall. He's got, you know, 280 whatever poundage he is right now.
Right.
He's does things and moves his body in a way that just it shouldn't be for a guy of his size and his stature, the way he can move and the things he can do on a basketball court. And he's had so many injuries in the past. I mean, you know, the navicular bone fracture in his foot. I mean, that's he missed the first 2 years. He joked about that. We know he was fastest sixer to 10,000 points. And someone asked how it was. He goes, well, I feel like I would have done it sooner. You know, if I hadn't missed all that time to start my career off and all the games he's missed because of load management all the years. So I actually do agree with you. I think last year would have been a year where I think it would have been a fair thing to give Joel Embiid the MVP. I mean, even the year before that, they were the one seed. It is getting to a point a little bit where it's like, okay, he's never going to win it. I mean, that's just, but I will say, like, right now, Jokic might be making his strongest case in his third year, because right now Denver's the one seed. They're playing great basketball, but there is like some goalpost moving in the sense that, okay, well, 2 years ago, Joel Embiid's team was the one seed. You didn't give it to him. Mm-hmm. Last year, he had a better record, and he was carrying the team when Ben Simmons was holding out and before James Harden got there, and he kept that team afloat and got them into the playoffs. It's not as maybe dramatic as Joel makes it out to be, the whole they hate the process thing, but I do think there are some people in the media and fans, I think, too, that are holding on to this narrative of like who Joel Embiid was, right? Like he was right. The guy who talked trash on Twitter to other players, who, you know, gotten a literal fight with Karl Anthony Towns, who always gotten in stuff with Andre Drummond. There was the jokes that like he's got more tweets than the games played at one point, but he didn't take care of his body. Like all these things were true, and he would tell you that they were true, and that he was, you know, probably a little immature, which I'm never gonna come down on a guy for that. I get that. I get immaturity in a big way. But over the last few years, he has grown so much. I think fatherhood has been a big factor in that. And I just think in general, he's become an adult. Like he's just figuring out life a little bit and figuring out himself. And I think it's translating on the court. And it's just a shame that I think a lot of the national narrative around him has not caught up to that yet.
Mm-hmm. No, and look, I don't ask that question to go down the argument with MVP and whether or not he's won, because I'm going to tell you right now, and I don't know where you're at on this, but as time has gone on and the Sixers continue to lose early in the playoffs, earlier than we would expect, I care less and less about the individual. Like on the ascension, oh, wow, and he won an MVP, and now they're on their way to the conference finals, and now they're on the way to the NBA finals. If it would have been a good progression, it would have been nice to see the award along the way. But now that you're getting close to that pinnacle, to that, you know, the prime years of the career, and wasting those years of the career without making it out of the second round, I tend to care less and less about the individual accolades. Are you approaching that? Are you at that same point, or am I just crazy?
Well, I can tell you that I get the sense Joel Embiid is there. I get the sense that James Harden is also there. You know, these are guys that have done, like, James Harden's done everything, right? He's done everything else. He's won an MVP. He's, you know, up until, you know, 10 straight All-Star games, probably should have been in this one, wasn't, yeah. But you know, it's pretty clear that, of course, the individual stuff means something to them. Like, of course, Embiid was pissed off when he wasn't named a starter, because he should have been. It's a joke, sure, that he wasn't to begin with, that he wasn't named one. So the individual stuff, it doesn't, it's not that it doesn't matter. It does. But I think both of those guys are at a point now where it's, you know, they don't care. Like, whatever. Like, I'm not an all-star. I'm not going to win MVP. Like, whatever. Like, we need to find a way to win, like, because, yeah, kind of what you already alluded to, we don't know how much time these guys have together. It behooves both sides in the offseason to find a way to make it work, because if James Harden does walk, like you kind of already talked about, where do they go from there? It's really tricky. It's not just as simple as, oh, well, James Harden is leaving whatever, $34 million, so the Sixers can just sign a guy for $34 million. It doesn't work that way in the NBA. It's way more complicated. So it would get tricky if James Harden were to choose to sign with another team. And I think for James Harden, like, to find a team that's going to have the cap space to offer you that money. And I get you're trying to make up for some of the money you perhaps lost when you took the pay cut this year. But, like, you're really going to go to Houston? Like, Mark, did you watch that Sixers-Houston game last week?
Yeah. It was
like, not... They are the worst team in the NBA record-wise. And with the eye test, it matches. They are a bad team.
Yeah, I'm not running the Houston. Things,
but I don't know, but it's bad. So, yeah, I think both of those guys are just at a point, and I think the team mostly, it, you know, thing that Tyrese Maxey keeps saying, the whole we season, not me season. I think that that's, as corny as that sounds, I think there is some validity to that. And I think when you bring in guys like PJ Tucker and like DeAnthony Melton, who are willing to sacrifice and, you know, don't need to score and don't need to do, like, they'll do all the little things to help the team win. I think those guys are clear examples of where this team is as a whole.
Okay, I'm with you there 100%. Now let's get to Tyrese Maxey here and this guy that's coming off the bench. I can understand when he was going through his rut. All right, you want to mix things up a little bit. Now he looks like he is back, and he looks like he is back with a vengeance. And he talked about getting his own mental right and getting his spirit back when it came to loving the game of basketball and attacking the rim and all the things we've seen him that have given us hope of the great player that he can be. I agree, and you said it earlier, it's time to put him back. It's time to have your best starting five, and I always say in basketball, I love taking you, especially if you're a top seed team, if you're a 1-2-3 type team. This is the best version of ourselves, and you throw it in the face of the opponent. You say, you deal with it. The DeAnthony Melton thing in the starting lineup, I get they like his defense. I get they like that what he can bring to the table offensively speaking, but he's not Tyrese Maxey. I think it's past time to get Maxey back in that starting five.
No, I'm 100% with you. And I didn't love the idea ever of Tyrese Maxey coming off the bench. But I already mentioned, I understood it. I understood it because the team was on a run. They were playing well. Keep it going. I think people overrate, and this is going to sound like, but I DeAnthony Melton has been a godsend for this team. He has been a perfect piece. And I think he's going to continue to play a crucial role for this team. And he's going to have to be good in the playoffs for them to get to where they want to go.
Okay. Round two, name something that's not boring.
A laundry. Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire. Huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus
terms and conditions apply. See website for details. People overrate his on ball defense a touch. He's not a bad on ball defender at all by any stretch. His real impact, though, is off the ball. He's such a good, you know, he gets deflections. And that's why they were comfortable moving on from Matisse Thybulle, because they knew they had a player in Melton that could do a lot of that, that could get deflections, that can get out in the open floor, that can do things like that. But that offered a lot more on the offensive end of the floor. So with that said, I think Tyrese Maxey, too, the biggest strides he's made recently, even Doc Rivers has said this, defensively, he's been so much better. He's been so much more aggressive, so much more physical, getting into the guys' bodies. And to me, like, he hasn't been a good defender, like, flat out. He just hasn't been in his NBA career. But when you look at the physical traits of this guy, you know, he's long, he's built solidly, like, he's a strong dude, and he cares, right? Like, he works so damn hard. He works as hard, if not harder, than anyone on the team. It always felt like it was just a matter of time before he would put it together on that end of the floor and be more of a two-way player. I think when he was drafted here, he said one of the guys he looked up to was Drew Holiday, because Drew Holiday played both sides of the floor. You know, he's a great defensive player that's also a good offensive player. I think Tyrese Maxey could maybe be the opposite, and I think he could be a great offensive player that's a good defensive player. And so I think, but the only way to do that too, Mark, is to give him the run and let him do that. And the last thing I'll say about him in the starting lineup, when James Harden first got here, Tyrese Maxey exploded. He went off. Look at the playoffs in that Toronto series. He scored 38 points in the first game of the playoffs. He is better with James Harden and Joel Embiid, and I believe that both of those guys are better with him on the floor because he is a threat to shoot. He's done so well at catch and shoot opportunities. He's great in the corners, and his speed opens up so much because you can't double as aggressively. You can't trap James Harden as aggressively. You can't double Joel Embiid as aggressively because you have the threat of Tyrese Maxey's speed. At any point, if they get him the ball, he's getting downhill and he's going to get to the rim. So I think ultimately, yeah, Tyrese Maxey should be in the starting lineup. I think that is your best starting five. And to have a player like DeAnthony Melton as one of your first off the bench is a pretty darn good thing to have.
Couldn't agree more. I know a lot of people, as the season winds down, they're going to be more hypercritical, if that's even possible, of Doc Rivers as the season goes on. And, of course, as the playoffs roll in and we see how the aesthetics are in the playoffs. But how hot is the seat that Doc Rivers is on right now, you think, in the eyes of management?
in the eyes of management, I don't think it's very hot at all, if I'm being perfectly honest.
No, that's why I have you on. You're sure.
Yeah, I'm just being honest. I think the organization, as of right now, you know, has his back. Now, if it's a second round exit again, and it doesn't end in a pretty fashion, the seat might get a little hot. That's just the way it's going to. I mean, if you, and especially too, Mark, I'd have to say this. Context matters in all these situations. Like if guys are hurt or whatever, then you can say like, okay, you know, X, I don't want to say a name because I don't want to put that into, you know, speak that into existence. But if X player is hurt and he's a big part of the team and you lose to Milwaukee or Boston, it's like, okay, like, what are you going to do? Like last year against Miami, like he didn't have Joel Embiid for the first two games. And when he came back, his face was still broken and his hand was, he had the torn thumb ligament and then he had a damaged finger on the other hand. So like, this guy was really banged up. Clearly, James Harden was not healthy at all. You see how much healthier he is right now, playing some of his best basketball as a Sixer right now. So I do think the context would matter. With that said, if everyone's healthy and, you know, they have the pieces that seem like they could that they could be good enough and they just flat out aren't. And if Doc Rivers decides to play an all-bench lineup that gets, you know, dusted for a 10-0 run, or if, you know, he's playing Dwayne Dedman over Paul Reed and it's very clear that Dwayne Dedman isn't the guy in that spot, that, you know, that should get the seat a little bit warmer. But my sense is the team, especially, I mean, it's hard with the run that they were on recently it's hard for anyone to say like, oh yeah, Doc Rivers needs to go. Like, it's hard to say that right now, but I understand the fan base's frustration because he does a lot of things that are quite frankly frustrating to watch and cover it. And you ask him about it and he kind of shoos it off. And it's like, no, like we're kind of trying to figure out we know you're smarter than us. We know you've been around the game a long time. So just tell us what you're thinking so that maybe it's something we're not seeing that you are. But yeah, I get the frustration from the fan base with some of his decision-making.
Understood. Real quick, I just got to say, Daryl Morey, I didn't give him enough credit for McDaniels at the deadline. Nice little player. Love how he attacks the rim. Very aggressive. Plays a very confident game. I got to give him credit.
Yeah, he's been pretty solid. I, you know, there are people that really loved Matisse Thybulle, and it's weird that we went from Ben Simmons being literally the most polarizing athlete I've ever covered in my life to Matisse Thybulle, who is pretty damn polarizing too. And just because they're so weird of players, right? Like they're just so, it's so, no, but like, not like weird people, but like weird, just weird as players. Like, cause Ben Simmons was a 6'10" point guard who was a great defender that just wouldn't shoot the basketball and couldn't hit free throws. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, there's never been a player that's really existed quite like that. And you have Matisse Thybulle, who's a two-team all-defensive team pick that you can't play in the playoffs because teams just don't guard him on offense. So it's just it's a really weird dynamic with those two guys. So I think with McDaniels, you get a much more balanced forward who can play both ends of the court. He can make an impact. Defensively, he can guard 1 through 4 pretty much. He's really good insurance too, Mark. I feel like let's say like George Niang has had his struggles throughout his career defensively in the postseason just because he doesn't move very well. Last year he was hurt. He was dealing with a knee issue. So you got to give him some benefit of the doubt there. But if he struggles again, it's nice to have a guy like McDaniels that you can plug in and play at the 4, or you can play at the 3 and play PJ Tucker. You know, you can have PJ Tucker at the 5, play him at the 4. Like, you have, when you have a guy like that who's so dynamic and long and athletic, it does give you way more options. And I've really liked him and Paul Reed playing together. I think it's really added something to the bench because the Sixers are loaded with talent. They are not loaded with athleticism. So when you have a McDaniels out there, when you have a Paul Reed out there, it just adds something that you don't normally see. And you know, I think the bench unit really benefits from that. So yeah, it's we got a long way to go. We'll see how it turns out in the postseason. But McDaniels looks like what they were going for was a more balanced player. And I think they accomplished that in getting McDaniels.
I like that. I like that. How you summed it up there. They have talent, but they don't really have athleticism. They don't have athletes. Yeah. So I like that. Just real quick on the buyout market. I saw there was some potential flirtation there with Kevin Love. Anybody else you could see potentially coming into Philadelphia in the not too distant future?
Well, the fact that they were even sniffing around Love, which I that's confirmed. They were interested. They just knew they couldn't compete. They weren't their expectations weren't high for that. Okay. They figured, you know, why would someone, why would anyone want to go to Miami, Mark? Weird. And I think too, from a basketball standpoint, Kevin Love's going to get the opportunity. Like, he's going to get a set role because they traded Dedmon to San Antonio and then he was bought out by San Antonio. So the backup center role is wide open. I think he's a guy that can play with Bam Adebayo. So I think that makes a lot of sense, that partnership. With the Sixers, I was told that they viewed him as quote unquote front court depth. So they were thinking maybe a little four, maybe a little five, but I don't think the role would have been nearly as defined. And
understood.
When you're Kevin Love and it's the Sixers or it's the Heat, and when you look at their kind of championship prospects, I guess right now the Sixers have slightly better ones, but unless you're the Celtics or the Bucks, or, you know, I think there's no other, you know, that those are the prime spots to go if you're looking just the title chase. With that said, though, I think what it shows is they're not content, right? Like, if they see something they like or saw a player they like that they think will help them, they'll make a move. Patrick Beverley, I still don't believe has signed anywhere yet. He's a guy that I think would be a really good fit for kind of just having that. We talked about, you know, D'Anthony Melton maybe not being the best on-ball guard defender. Patrick Beverley's a pretty darn good guard on-ball defender. And to have him in a role where you're putting – or you can put him maybe in more advantageous situations that make sense for him, you know, you can go with some small ball – some really funky, good small ball lineups where you're playing James Harden with, like, Patrick Beverley and Melton, and just to have those two guys, you know, out on the wings with Harden doing his thing, and then they're just playing defense on the other end wreaking havoc. So – yeah, that's a guy I would certainly be interested in. I don't know that they have any particular interest. I haven't seen them link to him at all, but they would. The interesting thing to know is, so let's say Kevin Love did want to come to Philadelphia, they would have had to make a move. They would have had to waive a player on the current roster. Like, would they have bought out Furkan Korkmaz? Would they have waived Montrezl Harrell, who has a player option for next year? Would they have waived Paul Reed and then had pitchforks down in Camden? That would have just been just from a contract standpoint, it would have been clean. From a player's, from a roster standpoint, I think it would have been a disaster. Basically, Isaiah Joe 2.0, who they let go for nothing, who leads the league in 3-point percentage, no big deal. but yeah, I would say they're pretty happy with what they have. But if there is something that makes sense for them, that they're not going to hesitate, they're going to look into it.
I don't really think they have much to worry about. I mean, they got Mac McClung just to lead them the rest of the way from this point on, right? We're good there. We're fine.
Sure. Hey, he had a hell of a night, man. Good for that guy.
I was so happy to see it.
It was cool.
Paul Hudrick, always great catching up with you. I'm sure your first of many appearances for the rest of the year when we talk to you about all things Sixers basketball. Liberty Ballers, make sure you check out everything Paul does at Liberty Ballers. It's fantastic stuff. Paul, great to see you again, buddy.
Great to see you too, pal. Anytime.
The great Paul Hudrick joining us on the Ruffin Orthopedics guest line from Liberty. Oh, I clipped it at the end. From Liberty Ballers. It was going so well. It was going so well, I tell you. Anyway, thanks to Paulie for joining us. Also, during that interview, a nice little nugget from our friend John McMullen about your boy Jonathan Gannon. We'll give a take on that coming up in just a second. But let me tell you right now about my friends at Manscaped, manscaped.com, where you can get 20% off and free shipping with promo code Farzy at manscaped.com. The leader in below-the-waist grooming. Join 4 million men worldwide who use Manscaped and trust their skin-safe technology that helps reduce the risk of nicks. So you can manscape with confidence and comfort with their Platinum Package 4.0, which is their best hygiene bundle yet. It includes the Lawnmower 4.0 trimmer as well as the Weed Whacker ear and nose hair trimmer. I use both, and yeah, they're great. So go to manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com. Use promo code Farzy for 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com. How about the amazing people at Freestone Farm CBD? FreestoneFarmCBD.com. Use promo code Farzy for 20% off. You'll enjoy their tropical tasting Bayox that clocks in at a chart topping 24.1% and Super CBD, which is half Hindu Kush, and 21%. Genetics of these guys are off the charts. So check out Freestone Farm CBD, FreestoneFarmCBD.com. How about PHL Sports Nation, Philadelphia Sports Nation, enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience across all social media and blogs. That's PHLSportsNation.com. Before we get to the chat check, before we get to our morning rush, here's a little nugget you might want to talk about in the chat as well. I'm seeing this by our friend John McMullen by way of Pro Football Talk. Jonathan Gannon was talking to Peter King. And Gannon, there's this quote. I loved Philly. This is from Jonathan Gannon. I loved Philly. I love Mr. Lurie. I love Howie Roseman. I love Nick Sirianni. They came back and were like, here's a new offer. I'm going to pay you more than being a head coach. That's cool, and I loved it, but I wanted to be a head coach, and I was excited about this because of Mr. Bidwell, Michael, as he would say, and, of course, Kyler Murray. So Howie Roseman, with Jeffrey Lurie's money, went to Jonathan Gannon and said, we're going to pay you more than what the Cardinals could pay you. I'm going to try to find this article real quick here. I literally just saw it towards the end of that interview. And Jonathan Gannon, if this is the way this played out, and I'm going to try to find this on Pro Football Talk real quick. If Jonathan Gannon just lost that Super Bowl and Howie Roseman went up to him and said, we'll outbid them and you'll still be a defensive coordinator. We'll give you a significant raise, more than a head coach would be making after that Super Bowl, then that is bat-you-know-what crazy. If that's the chronology of this going down, then that baffles my mind. Pro Football Talk, here we go. This is from Peter King's Football Morning in America on Pro Football Talk. Let's see where we're going here. I'm scanning this article right now. He's talking about the Super Bowl, Kelsey. Let me see. Let me do a quick Gannon search here. I really want to make sure I get this information to you guys on this show. Of course, it's not coming up. Gannon's widely respected. Here we go. This might do it. All right. So the previous question from our man Peter King. Gannon answered by saying, if Kyler Murray isn't here, I don't take this job. I think the offense would look much different. This guy does things that is that completely handcuffs you as a defensive play caller. The defense has to defend a lot more plays with Murray as your quarterback. So there's really two offenses I see us using in Arizona. King, sounds like you were ready to leave, but it wasn't easy. He says, I loved Philly, gives the quote, the whole thing, but they were going to pay him more in Philly, but he wanted to be a head coach. King says, reportedly, you are going to hire 29, 20, 35-year-old defensive. Come on. It doesn't give the context. Oh. It doesn't give the context more than, like, it doesn't really tell you the order. So it's possible then that Howie Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie were going to outbid Arizona. Or the offer they had already given him before the Super Bowl to stay in Philadelphia, giving him a raise, that maybe that was the order of it. But if the order was, yeah, stay here in Arizona, go get that coaching offer, and then come back to us and we'll outbid it. If that was it, after that Super Bowl performance, that's crazy. That they tried to pay more than a head coach in order to keep him as your DC. That's bonkers. Or the other order of it could be that while all the other offers were done and they were going into the Super Bowl, maybe those 2 weeks leading up to it, after Gannon had already said he was staying there in Philadelphia, maybe they told him, hey, look, whatever you were going to get there, we're still going to give you a raise here. We're still going to pay you more here. And then maybe the head coach, maybe that's when Arizona knocked on the door again and said, hey, you know what? We want to talk to your boy. And then after the Super Bowl, Howie Roseman said, no, why don't you just not get on the plane with us, stay here in Arizona and talk to the Bidwell family and see how that goes. But if it was go talk to them, come back to us with the offer, and then we'll try to beat it, or we'll beat it, then that's bat you know what crazy. By the way, worth noting that, yes, Nick Rallis, who we actually played on this show, was a linebackers coach with the Eagles. He's going to be the defensive coordinator at 29 years old under Jonathan Gannon in Arizona. Rallis is the guy that in training camp, if you remember, Nick Sirianni tackled him, and he used that as a coaching moment to show his players, see how coach hit me? That was too high. You got to hit low. Cut the motor. Cut the motor. Anyway, so I found that interesting. Let's get the chat check. One benefit of me doing this is that I can put things up here. I like this. Mullet. What's up, Mullet Alvarado? Nice to see you, buddy. Good morning to you. Sean Gillespie, good morning. Kevin, good morning. April. Good morning, April. SB Ricky, what's going on? Nice to see you. Sean, what do you got here? I heard McClung makes more money through his YouTube, or makes money through his YouTube presence. Wouldn't be shocked. Wouldn't be shocked. That is one thing I meant to look up. Let's just put in real quick on the old YouTube here. See what I can get to. Because I know his social media presence blew up over the weekend. He's got 1 million followers on Instagram now. Million followers on the old Insta, which is awesome. Mac McClung. Let's see if it just comes up as a YouTube page here. Typing that in. Oh, is the press conference and all that. Oh, it's all dunk highlights, which is probably what it is mostly. But yeah, these things are piling up the views. So good for him. Last I checked, his Twitter was like at 81,000, and it seemed like it was exponentially rising. It was at 81,000. Yeah, it's at 103,000 now. So yeah, he had himself a good weekend. Social media presence and all. Good for him. SB Ricky, nice to see you. I heard Mihai. What's up, Mihai? Mihai Sanchez. Morning, Mar family. Philly finally won a championship. Let's go. Mihai, when is the Max McClung statue going to be going to get built? Soon. April, another second round exit for the Sixers would suck, but I think this is where they are headed. Beep, boop, pop. April, unfortunately true. This is from Sean, but the Sixers can still surprise us. That's what I'm talking about the last 26 games. 26 games. You know what? Here's what it's the famous quote nowadays, ladies and gentlemen. I am ready to get hurt again. I'm ready to get hurt again, Sixers. Build up my hopes and dreams over the last 26 games of this regular season. Build up my dreams. Build up my hope that you guys are going to make it out of the second round of the playoffs. Build my dreams and hopes that you're going to make it to a conference finals. Oh, my God, have me believing that you're going to make a finals appearance. Do that over the last 2 months of the season. Please, 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 please. I'm ready to get hurt again. I am ready to get hurt again. Boop. Houston, I forgot they had a team. April, I mean, at least you can cut off you and not the guest. Thank you, April. That's true. That's true. Oh, Blue City. What's your opinion on the first day of the XFL so far? And what team are you rooting for in the XFL? Blue City, I am not watching the XFL. If I happen to be on my sofa and I happen to not be doing anything, which is really slim chances coming up here, I will watch a little bit of the XFL. But in terms of appointment viewing, not so much. Not so much. Good luck to all the players. XFL, yes, more football. Sean Gillespie, you're excited. That's good. April, I call BS. I feel like he's just trying to fire up people or fire people up. Oh, Peter King or Gannon himself? Sean Gillespie, Gannon isn't worth the money he was getting. How he is going crazy again, if true. I really don't understand how anyone would want Gannon, who never makes adjustments. The NFL is ridiculous. I concur. Oh, Jeff, you actually reminded me of this. Celtics, 2 NBA All-Stars look legit in the All-Star game. Boston is tough. Jeff, I agree. But one of my favorite moments from last night's game, probably my favorite moment that had nothing to do with a Sixers player, was Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum going one-on-one for that brief stretch they did in the third quarter, I want to say it was. That was cool. And everybody respected it, where they just kind of isolated those guys. They isolated those guys, and they stepped off to the side. But that was cool. Tatum did not win that battle. For a guy that dropped an all-star record 55 points in that game, he did not win that battle against his teammate Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown won that one. It was fun. It was fun. But Jaylen Brown was the clear-cut winner in that battle, head-on-head, head-to-head. So there you go. Let's get to the Morning Rush, brought to you by Sky Motor Cars, skymotorcars.com. Thanks to everybody in the chat. You guys are awesome, as per usual. Couple of nuggets from Nick Castellanos, okay? Read a couple articles about him over the weekend. He used words like pissed off, frustrated, baseball wasn't fun, talked about how it felt like a job last year. That was from one article, and that came from Todd Zlecki of MLB.com. Then I also read Alex Coffey's story from Inquirer.com that talked about the adjustments Nick Castellanos had to make last year, including the time his first son was born. He was just a breakout prospect with the Tigers organization. His second son is born. The lockout goes down in Major League Baseball. Then he signs with a new team. He's with a new team, and he's got to make all the adjustments in the world. So there was a lot going on, a little distraction in the best way possible, becoming a dad for the second time. He talked about missing opportunities there where he felt like he should be changing diapers. And all that's well and good. But he did also talk about how this time around he feels a lot more comfortable. Now, some people might hear comfortable and say, wait a minute, hold on a second. You hit 13 home runs last season after a 34 home run season. You hit .263 with a .305 on base percentage. That's terrible. And you want to talk about being comfortable? I think baseball players are a weird breed, and I know I'm not alone in thinking that. I want him to be comfortable. I don't want him to be complacent. I don't want him to feel, oh, well, last year struggled, no big deal. And I don't think he feels like that. The fact that he was pissed off, the fact that he was frustrated, the fact that for a guy that says, I didn't go to college, I hit baseballs, for him to say last year was a job, that's really bad. That's him acknowledging how bad last year was. And you know what? He did come on strong in the second half. There was the injury. But if you look at his July, August, and September numbers, all right, 103 games, 100 games, 14 games, okay, in the month of September. He went from, let's see, July 282 was his batting average. August 300 was his batting average in 100 games. September, in a very only 14 games, he hit .357. And then in the playoffs, especially on the defensive side of things, I didn't think I'd talk about him as much as a defensive threat, but damn, he was great defensively in the playoffs and in the World Series last year. But I even said this before I read any article about him at spring training here, how he's getting himself ready for the season, how he is trying to get comfortable, put last year behind him, step into the batter's box, and be more prepared. He did say more prepared than he's ever been. Even before I read all that, I mean, even if you believe just in the law of averages, I don't think Nick Castellanos is going to have another struggle-filled season. And last year was exactly that. I mentioned the home run numbers, but you also talk about the .305 on base percentage. He has got to get that back way up going into this season. And I got confidence he's going to do it because I think he's a much better ball player than what we saw. And I do believe John Middleton, that when you think about last year's free agents and you think about last year's trades, the only player they were willing to go over the luxury tax for was Nick Castellanos. I think this year is the year he helps the Phillies out. I think this is the year that he helps John Middleton, who made that statement last year, and proves why he is a guy that is worth breaking the luxury tax for. That's what I see. And reading these articles about him at least put me in the right mindset that this guy is going to attack this season the way we thought he would attack last season. Now he's a little bit more comfortable. He feels like he's going to be the best teammate he could possibly be on this team, and not just as a guy in the clubhouse, but a guy that is going to go out there on the baseball field and show this team just how talented he can be to help him win. And being two wins shy of a World Series championship certainly helped that motivation as well. The other thing that came out with baseball over the weekend was this. Manny Machado's long-term deal that he signed with the San Diego Padres is fascinating. And that was the number one thing a lot of us were looking at, even when he came here to Philadelphia. Was he going to do the opt-out thing? Was he going to build in, oh, after 4 years, 5 years, I can opt out into a deal? Looks like that's the way it's going to go. Bryce Harper, when he signed his 13-year deal here in Philadelphia, did not sign an opt-out, did not include an opt-out in his contract. So he is here for the long term. Having him here even though he's not going to be here in the first half of the season, thanks to the elbow injury, there is something about having Bryce Harper in your team. Just something about a two-time MVP, but it goes beyond what he can do on the field. It goes beyond the home run. It goes beyond all that stuff. It goes on for just always believing you can win. When we talk about it all the time in football, and I mention this a lot with Jalen Hurts. You know, when you have Jalen Hurts as your quarterback, when you have Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, you feel like you can win this game. No matter what, you have a chance to win the game. With Bryce Harper in your clubhouse, first half of the season notwithstanding, you feel like you can win. You feel like you have somebody there that's going to do something special to spark a comeback, even if you're down 5-6 runs. You feel like you're going to have a chance to win because Bryce Harper is going to motivate this team, whether it's by his play or by his leadership in the clubhouse. And I do think right now that without Bryce Harper, and they certainly stayed afloat last year without him. Now they can stay afloat without him with a better rotation. And now they can stay afloat without him with Trey Turner as your shortstop and also either leading off or batting second in this lineup. It's just around the corner, folks, and I can't wait for it. Baseball will be upon us. And just reading these stories and seeing things about Andrew Painter and his 95 to 100-mile-per-hour fastball and the control he's showing and adding the cutter and all these different things, I just can't wait for it. And Nick Castellanos is going to be a really interesting case to see if he does bounce back in the way that myself and many others think that he will in this upcoming season. And listening to him talk about how listening to him be so honest about what he was going through last season and how frustrated he was, accountability is such a tall tale thing for a lot of players. And when he holds himself accountable and how angry he was at himself for last year's performance, it gives me a little more confidence to have a bounce back season, like I said, that me and many other people think you will have. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. You guys are great as per usual. My name is Mark Farzetta. This is the Farzy Show. Make sure you guys hit subscribe on the old YouTube channel as well. Hopefully we have PJ back tomorrow to push some buttons for us, right? Thanks for watching, everybody. Have a great rest of your day. Catch you guys tomorrow. See ya.